his medical practice. Soon fossils filled nearly the whole of his house in Brighton and consumed much of his income. Much of the rest went to underwriting the publication of books that few cared to own. Illustrations of the Geology of Sussex, published in 1827, sold only 50 copies and left him £300 out of pocket, an uncomfortably substantial sum for the times. In some desperation, Mantell hit on the idea of turning his house into a museum and charging admission, then belatedly realized that such a mercenary act would ruin his standing as a gentleman, not to mention as a scientist, and so he allowed people to visit the house for free. They came in their hundreds, week after week, disrupting both his practice and his home life. Eventually, he was forced to sell most of his collection to pay off his debts. Soon after, his wife left him, taking their four children with her. Remarkably, his troubles were only just beginning. In the district of Sydenham in South London, at a place called Crystal Palace Park, there stands a strange and forgotten sight. The world's first life-sized models of dinosaurs. Not many people travel there these days, but once this was one of the most popular attractions in London. In effect, as Richard Forte has noted, the world's first theme park. Quite a lot about the models is not strictly correct. The iguanodon's thumb has been placed on its nose as a kind of spike, and it stands on four sturdy legs, making it look like a rather stout and awkwardly overgrown dog. In life, the iguanodon did not crouch on all fours, but was bipedal. Looking at them now, you would scarcely guess that these odd and lumbering beasts could cause great rancor and bitterness. But they did. Perhaps nothing in natural history has been at the center of fiercer and more enduring hatreds than the line of ancient beasts known as dinosaurs. At the time of the dinosaurs' construction, Sydenham was on the edge of London, and its spacious park was considered an ideal place to recreate the famous Crystal Palace, the glass and cast-iron structure that had been the centerpiece of the Great Exhibition of 1851, and from which the new park naturally took its name. The dinosaurs, built of concrete, were a kind of bonus attraction. On New Year's Eve, 1853, a famous dinner for 21 prominent scientists was held inside the unfinished iguanodon. Gideon Mantell, the man who had found and identified the iguanodon, was not among them. The person at the head of the table was the greatest star of the young science of paleontology. His name was Richard Owen, and by this time he had already devoted several productive years to making Gideon Mantell's life hell. Owen had grown up in Lancaster, in the north of England, where he had trained as a doctor. He was a born anatomist, and so devoted to his studies that he sometimes illicitly borrowed limbs, organs, and other parts from cadavers and took them home for leisurely dissection. Once, while carrying a sack containing the head of a black African sailor that he had just removed, Owen slipped on a wet cobble and watched in horror as the head bounced away from him down the lane and through the open doorway of a cottage, where it came to rest in the front parlour. What the occupants had to say upon finding an unattached head rolling to a halt at their feet can only be imagined. One assumes that they had not formed any terribly advanced conclusions when, an instant later, a fraught-looking young man rushed in, wordlessly retrieved the head, and rushed out again. In 1825, aged just 21, Owen moved to London and soon after was engaged by the Royal College of Surgeons to help organize their extensive but disordered collections of medical and anatomical specimens. Most of these had been left to the institution by John Hunter, a distinguished surgeon and tireless collector of medical curiosities, but had never been catalogued or organized, largely because the paperwork explaining the significance of each had gone missing soon after Hunter's death. Owen swiftly distinguished himself with his powers of organization and deduction. At the same time, he showed himself to be a peerless anatomist, with instincts for reconstruction almost on a par with the great Cuvier in Paris. He became such an expert on the anatomy of animals that he was granted first refusal on any animal that died at the London Zoological Gardens, and these he would invariably have delivered to his house for examination. Once his wife returned home to find a freshly deceased rhinoceros filling the front hallway. He quickly became a leading expert on all kinds of animals living and extinct, from platypuses, echidnas, and other newly discovered marsupials, to the hapless dodo and the extinct giant birds called moas that had roamed New Zealand until eaten out of existence by the Maoris. He was the first to describe the Archaeopteryx after its discovery in Bavaria in 1861, and the first to write a formal epitaph for the dodo. Altogether, he produced some 600 anatomical papers, a prodigious output. But it was for his work with dinosaurs that Owen is remembered. He coined the term Dinosauria in 1841. It means terrible lizard, and was a curiously inapt name. Dinosaurs, as we now know, weren't all terrible. Some were no bigger than rabbits, and probably extremely retiring. And the one thing they most emphatically were not was lizards, which are actually of a much older, by 30 million years, lineage. Owen was well aware that the creatures were reptilian, and had at his disposal a perfectly good Greek word, herpeton, but for some reason chose not to use it. Another more excusable error, given the paucity of specimens at the time, was that dinosaurs constitute not one, but two orders of reptiles, the bird-hipped Ornithischians and the lizard-hipped Saurischians. Owen was not an attractive person, in appearance or in temperament. A photograph from his late middle years shows him as gaunt and sinister, like the villain in a Victorian melodrama, with long, lank hair and bulging eyes, a face to frighten babies. In manner he was cold and imperious, and he was without scruple in the furtherance of his ambitions. He was the only person Charles Darwin was ever known to hate. Even Owen's son, who soon after killed himself, referred to his father's lamentable coldness of heart. His undoubted gifts as an anatomist allowed him to get away with the most barefaced dishonesties. In 1857, the naturalist T.H. Huxley was leafing through a new edition of Churchill's Medical Directory when he noticed that Owen was listed as Professor of Comparative Anatomy and Physiology at the Government School of Mines, which